Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 753. Happy Halloween. Is this podcast actually stretching? Or is it your imagination?
I don't know how a podcast stretches. No, I guess it's your imagination. Problem solved. At Midnight's back next week, the first week in November. We had our normal hiatus week and a half off, but we will be back next week. I've been shooting The Wall this past week, which has been super fun, and then also fun, comfortable tour dates. All right, I'm talking about myself too much. Apologies. But something that is not me-related that I am very excited about, producer Katie sent over this email and said, if it's cool, I want to congratulate my friends who got married this past weekend. Of course it's cool. This is her friends Kat Moore and Hugh Hunter, and Kat actually owns a gallery where I bought a sculpture piece by Chris Cooksey. So I've met her. She is a wonderful woman. She and Hugh got married. They are an awesome couple. They have a dog named Banjo. We and the Nerdist community are wishing them all the best. So I hope you're having a wonderful honeymoon or whatever you're doing, Hugh and Kat. And I look forward to seeing you guys in the future. Also from the Nerdist community corkboard, which you can reach by sending an email to events@nerdist.com. Seek Donnelly says, I'm a writer-artist living in L.A., working for a comic company called OSSM Comics, and soon at LEGO. I have 4 days off on my latest Kickstarter called The King of Neverland. It's a young adult novel with some beautiful art by Ashley Lanny. In the story, Peter Pan has killed Captain Hook, and because of this act of taking a life, a curse has fallen on him that has caused him to grow up. Now he's an enemy of the Lost Boys, ruling over the pirates as King of Neverland. It's a lot of fun, and even if you aren't a Peter Pan fan, I promise there's something you will love about the story. Go to Kickstarter and search King of Neverland. Well, that sounds awesome. So good luck to you, Seek Donnelly. Again, events@nerdist.com. If you have anything out there that you want to send to us, I am so excited and pleased to put this podcast out on this day and also what it means on this day. This episode is Bruce Campbell, who did not disappoint in any way and actually turned out to be one of my favorite people I've ever had on the podcast. I'm not trying to speak in hyperbole. I'm being legit. Bruce Campbell is not only sweet and cool, but is so esoteric, beyond hilarious, amazing. I know you guys already knew this. What a perfect episode to put the king, Bruce Campbell, on the Nerdist Podcast on Halloween. Also promoting Ash vs. Evil Dead, which I've been so excited about for so long. The trailers look amazing. I've been excited since Sam Raimi came on and was talking about it. It premieres tonight, Halloween, at 9 p.m. on Stars. So, Bruce Campbell, Ash vs. Evil Dead, this podcast. I'm in love with this man, and I hope I get to do a lot more stuff with him. So here's the Nerdist Pod. He's also Groovy Bruce on Twitter, if you didn't know. I'm sure you know. If you listen to this show, you probably know everything that I've just said. But Bruce Campbell, you are the king. I am so honored to have you on our Halloween episode, the Nerdist Podcast number 753. Whoa, what a scary number. Whoa. Katie, roll the boo.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
What is your Wookiee book?
This is our guest book.
Everyone, I should give you a Book of the Dead, yeah.
Well, I do have the Handbook for the Recently Deceased.
That's right up there.
Beetlejuice.
That's pretty good.
Do you have a Necronomicon? Do you have a Necronomicon?
Not with me, because they smell like crap. They smell like a locker room.
You know what? You're absolutely right. I think the next book should be the Necronomicon.
Yeah. It's important. If you're going to do the Wookiee, just throw that in there.
But what, I'm afraid to open that one. If I open it, a bunch of bad shit happens.
No, you just can't read aloud.
That's it. I can open it. I can browse.
Yeah, just like keep moving.
So you could have a Necronomicon in a Barnes & Noble, and then people could just go in and just read
it. You can, but boy, the people who loiter at Barnes & Nobles are doomed.
Wait, I feel like the people who loiter at Barnes & Noble, someone did open a Necronomicon.
They did.
And then they all came out.
They're living there. They're the real walking dead.
The real actual walking dead.
The new reality series.
Have you noticed that? And those people have staked those chairs out way in advance.
I mean, I feel like you could get there the minute it would open and be like, how the fuck is this guy already here? Like, they would, there's a portal. There's a portal that they're going in through.
No, they're regulars, and that's how they know.
That's how they know, exactly.
They've scoped it out for 7 years.
And if you tried to take a seat, they're like, that's my seat. And you're like, but it's
hey,
not.
Man. Hey. Oh, whoa.
Hey.
I got my stuff there.
But see, in your case, you'd be able to go, I'm sorry, I'm Bruce Campbell. And they'd be like, oh, well, by all means, please take this.
Not necessarily.
Really?
No, my little small town, we got a little tall poppy thing going on.
Oh,
there.
You do?
Yeah.
You do. So it'd be like, because you're Bruce Campbell.
You drive too nice of a car, you might get cut off.
All right.
Yeah.
They're
like, yeah. And plus, if you don't drive an American car, you're out of luck.
Yeah, shit out of luck, son.
You're doomed.
Well, my question to you is, how do you go back and flaunt it in everyone's fucking faces that you're very successful now?
No, the good news is in where I live, I'll be standing behind someone who has a fleece jacket on, completely covered in animal fur of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
They're worth $1 billion.
Sure.
Because they are not showing it to anybody. They're not really interested. Yet, I just came from 7 years in Miami where the house, they take the house and they move it right to the front
mm-hmm.
of the property.
Right.
Look at my house. It's all about smoke. It's a sizzle, and they want you to see that. From the old country, if you come to see what they've got, this house that they're renting that they don't even own.
Sure.
The car they don't own.
Right.
Miami's a different ballgame. They want you to know it.
Yeah, my mom's from Miami. I lived there for a little while
when
I was a kid.
It, man.
It's super flashy.
And drive however you want.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Also,
well, drive based on where you came from. I mean, the guy from Haiti, what does he know? He's merging how they do it there.
Yeah. It is a true automobile melting pot of driving skills.
I call them oh my God moments. I had them just about every day on burn notice because we'd be driving at all hours in weird places. And I realize half the people on the road in Miami have no idea where they're going. They're from somewhere else. They're visiting. They rented a car. Hey, Miami, let's drive around to Miami. And then they get to certain outskirts, which is always
cool. How dare you make fun of the Swedish?
It's always. Well, they get lost so easily, the Swedes. You know, if it's flat, they don't know how to navigate. And if there's no ice, they're doomed. So they get, mostly these people would get to the edge of like Coral Gables and go, well, that's turn around. And they'll just, it's a full on UE.
So a German felon.
They're air from all over, as you can imagine. Miami would be a melting pot.
I feel like burn notice is what happened. That's the moment you shit your pants right before you get hit by a driver from Sweden. Oh, I've been put on burn notice. Blah, and then the car hits you and then you're dead. Is that accurate?
It's more accurate if you're on a bicycle in Miami.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, there's no infrastructure for bikes. There's about a quarter mile of bike paths in Miami.
Oh, my God.
I found them all. They're interconnected by 1/16 of a mile each on opposite sides of the road.
Yeah.
So you have to cross each road to get to the next hunk of sidewalk. Because in Miami, it's more like, well, I thought your brother-in-law was going to do the whole side of this street. No. My brother-in-law said every other section of the side of the street. That's twice the amount if you want the whole sidewalk.
Oh, well, then no.
No, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's let that sit for a decade. Did you know they painted the Burn Notice studio out before we were done filming?
What?
We had this rickety old building.
Yeah.
It's a Pan Am building. It mm-hmm. used to be for American Airlines eventually, but Pan Am it started. This was where FDR, the dinner key, where FDR took a pontoon plane, took off for whatever, Potsdam, and met with the other leaders during World War II. It was a secret mission. So the dinner key has history. So then this facility became an auditorium in the 60s, and Jim, who's our Doors guy? Jim? Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison.
Jim
the
Morrison.
Doors, yeah.
His whip it out moment was in that auditorium.
Oh, my gosh.
Where we filmed Burn Notice.
That is fantastic. His dick must be haunting that facility.
I want to put up a 6 foot, a full-size Jim Morrison with the hole missing, and you get to put your own thing through and take a picture. I'm telling you, man, it would sell. Yeah, it'd sell big.
Mean, you're sitting on a gold mine that you
and you don't even know
you
it.
You don't even know it. You need to get back down there and make that joke.
That was an aha moment.
Yeah.
And then, but one of the.
Can I ask you a quick question, though?
Yeah.
Is it too jokey if over the space is a tiny door because he was in the doors? And then you open the door, and then you get to put it through.
Well, now you're getting a little obtuse, but that could happen.
Okay, no, I listen.
You know what? In your museum, do that.
You know what? Maybe I will in my rival Jim Morrison dick pic museum.
We had a couple women on the crew who were at that actual performance.
Oh, wow.
And the cops were so ready to arrest Jim Morrison. They were like, apparently he didn't even get it out. He started to make, I'll, you know, you people, I'm going to do whatever to you. Because he wasn't really sure what his name was at that point. Started to do something gesticulatingly, and the cops were like, fum! The cops faced him. They didn't face the crowd.
Right.
That was the difference with the doors. They were always like, what is Jim Morrison going to do now?
Now, do you feel like it's that they were going to arrest him, or they were like, I want to see it first? Like, maybe they were scrambling to...
There could have been a melee started around what could have happened, but apparently
it never
happened. And they forgave him while we were shooting Borton Notes. There was a proclamation. They forgave Jim Morrison.
It was
a penis proclamation that you're off the hook, Jim.
I think you mean a cocklamation.
That would be even better.
Now, I don't want this to deter your plans for this museum, even though it didn't actually come out, because this is really a great idea.
Well, no, I'm going to continue the story. So now it's a rickety building. Every time it rained there during the show, which was every day, water would collect in giant trash cans all around the studio.
Yeah.
And when they were told to take care of that water problem, they did. They just rerouted it through a crazy person's series of tubes and channels into even larger 55-gallon drums, which would be drained, I guess, after the green stuff starts floating on the top. Let's drain it.
Sure.
So we had a little bit of that going on. So the place needed to be torn down desperately. But one of the guys on the city council was like, it's such a coincidence that I'm a real estate lawyer / developer. So we found out that they wanted to not renew our lease, even though we were employing. We had a whole list of everybody that we employed for 7 years down there on that show. Even when we started to lose the local merchants, like the hotel guys across the street were like, are you kidding me? You know how many hotel rooms I get a year from Burn Notice, from all the actors
bring
in? Left all the restaurants. You know those actors. They're always boozing it up.
Yeah, that's what they love
per
to
diem,
do.
Per diem. That's
what
you spend it on.
Goes.
Booze.
You might as well just pay them in bottles.
Yeah. And broads. So they made a bunch of noise. But what eventually – I started to find out who was making all this noise of what company wanted to do whatever. And it was a real estate company. And you went to their website. It was a beautiful website. They were going to build these two giant towers that were these really luxury condos. And behind that was two other hotel towers. And they just removed one from that picture.
Okay.
There's only one two-tower building here.
Yeah.
It's – forget this other one.
Right,
That's just
– they just decided to do the one.
You probably won't see that.
No, so let's just do the one.
Just the one is there.
Yeah.
And then our entire building, which was, I don't know, 1 million square feet, was removed from the picture because they wanted to show the view.
Oh.
And we were in the middle of the view, and it was going to become their own personal park across the way. And guess what? It's their own. It's done.
They did it.
They did it.
Oh, I thought this was going to have a happy ending.
Oh no! It's a rip the thing down. That thing was gone so fast after we were out of there. I think the last van is pulling away with the last burned wreck. I wanted to push the button. That would have been cool.
But no,
take it down. And then it was gone. And now it is it's a park.
Oh my God!
It's a park. They did it.
That's ridiculous.
That son of a gun. That guy. Mister, you little know who your name is. Yeah.
I know you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
Mister Real Estate
Don't tell
developer.
Me you don't follow me around.
Yeah, it's way. How did you know where to find me in that building?
Huh?
Huh? About now.
So anyway, that it shows you, though, life goes on.
Yeah.
We built a castle for Army of Darkness back in 1991 on this ranch. And this thing was a 300, like it was about a 270 degree castle that we built.
Mm-hmm.
We needed a lot of it. And what are you going to do with it after we shot it? Apparently, they left it for over a year when we were gone. They shot some music videos there.
Yeah.
Because you're going to do that. Lights and torches and run around. Hey, there's a castle in the desert. We got to use that, man. It's going to be awesome. And then they finally tore it down. And I remember I did a show called The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. It was a Western.
I adore that show.
Which was like 3 years after Army of Darkness. I chased bad guys right where the castle was.
Oh, so they took it down.
I rode over my grave. But it's amazing, though. It just shows you, okay, we're going to use it for that. 3 years later, we're going to use it for that. I can't imagine how many – the stories that the sets have.
Well, you know what it tells you? That in our business, never get attached to anything.
Oh, my God. I'm a backlot writer, though. I took a Sharpie when I was doing this Briscoe show because it was on the Warner Brothers backlot,
mm-hmm.
which is – you know, it's a cool backlot.
Yeah, over in Burbank?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And behind all the standing sets, like the New York Street sets, because they're not going to tear those down right away.
Right.
Those are good for 20 years probably because it's – here's a tour of the – here's our New York Street. The permanent streets, you had a little bit of stability. But I went behind a lot of those doorways and put my name and put the date and signed it. So it's not worth anything to anybody. But if I see those – I saw one. I went to Lois and Clark after I did
Briscoe. Oh, my gosh.
Briscoe.
Lois and Clark.
Yeah. They were on the same lot, same everything. And so I played bad guy for 3 episodes. And I had to come out one of the same doors and I looked up and there was the signature. I went – well, just time marches on.
President Reagan.
It was almost a wistful moment.
Oh, that's so nice. I mean, you've gotten to work on such great stuff.
That was an icebreaker for James Garner.
What?
If you meet James Garner, if you meet anybody famous, do you have a plan?
Shit my pants.
It helps. No, it helps to have a plan.
I my plan is that I don't bother anyone anymore.
Sometimes you have to. I had to.
Happened to me Sunday.
I went to a premiere with Jack Lemmon. He was in the movie, and James Garner was in the movie. It was this comedy president movie.
Yes, yes.
I didn't care about the movie one way or the other. I was like, I'm going to meet James Garner.
Yep.
So I got Jack Lemmon quick. He was sitting down with his family. I went, I don't care. You're here at a function. You're not at a private dinner at Chase's.
Not at a restaurant, yeah.
No, not here. This is it. So I knew his son. I worked with him as an apprentice.
Chris Lemmon.
Right after high school, we had the same birthday, 6 years older. So I said, Mr. Lemmon, what a great time I had working with your son after high school in 1976. And Jack was like,
yeah.
I mean, nothing. Blanksville. But then his wife went, oh, the Cherry County Playhouse. And Jack went, oh, I remember that. And then I engaged him for like the 30 seconds, got to meet him.
Yeah,
I know to go.
Yep.
But James Garner, I'm like, where is he? I gotta get him. He was in the back of the restaurant in a corner with three guys with their backs facing out.
Oh, sure.
He wasn't. No one was getting to him because he was. I gotta go to this thing, but I'm not gonna like it. You can tell. That's exactly what was the approach.
No, you can't make me go either.
Doggone it! All right, I'll go, but I ain't talking to no one. You know how I hate these things. Done this for 40 years, for Christ's sake.
Why do I keep doing it?
So I went, crap. I'm doomed. But then, as luck would have it, a doddering guy is walking along and hits a raised piano stand. Oh, he face plants. He goes straight down. He's wearing glasses, and they blew apart in two directions. He hit with such force. Like, wham, we were like, oh, Jesus Christ. Me and a couple other guys, we grabbed him up, scooped him up, grabbed his glasses, took him back into the kitchen. He had, like, cut his nose from the glasses. And so one of us, like, taped his glasses together like a science project.
Sure.
And you know, we mopped him up. And thank you, son. You saved my life. What's your name? It's Bruce Campbell. My name's Jack Garner. What? Jack Garner.
Sounds familiar.
Wait, is your brother Jim Garner? Oh, Jim, yeah, he's right over there. Oh, so that's your brother, is James Garner? Yeah. Oh, well, boy, it'd be great to meet him. Come on, I'll take you.
Oh.
He grabs me and he pushes through the three goons that were around him. Jim, come here. I want you to meet the kid who saved my life right here. And so James Garner's like, what? What are you doing? What's happening? Why am I talking to him? But I got him with the Warner backlot.
He did Maverick.
Of course.
In the 60s. The backlot was gigantic. And they were everywhere.
All of Burbank.
So I worked on the same Western backlot, but 20 years later. And that's how I got him. I'm like, just want you to know, it was a pleasure to work on Laramie Street. I know you've been there a million times. And, of course, his eyes lit up. He's like, oh, Laramie Street. Yes, I remember Laramie Street. Oh, you should have seen it then. And I knew, I'm like, fist pumping. Nice. I went, I got him. I got Jimmy.
All that had to happen was his brother had to shatter his nose, and then you had to drop the Western.
and get his fifth concussion.
I can't feel my face, but I want you to meet this kid.
Whoever his name was, I forgot everything now.
I've lost a lot of blood.
So you got to have the right approach, and Shatner would be the third triumvirate of how I got him.
Yeah, and did you have a good Shatner story?
Oh, baby.
Please.
Because, okay, that's my hero. Watch the original Star Trek. Everyone can have their Adventure Babylons and their, you know, spinoffs and Next Generations. I got that. You go ahead with that. I want Shatner.
Yep.
There was nowhere to meet him when I was a kid. You know, these conventions weren't as ubiquitous as they are now.
Right.
So finally, in some green room, you know, we're always going, passing each other these conventions because Shatner does a lot of these.
Mm-hmm.
He's 84. He's like, come on, where's the next convention?
I'm going to fight a bear.
Yeah. Like, you can't stop me. So I finally saw him. And
I'm not
like,
a pussy like Garner.
I'm like, I can't go. I can't do Star Trek. I can't throw that down. You know, Mr. Shatner, I love Star Trek.
Right.
That'll go.
Yeah.
And I'll be a loser and a moron in his eyes for the rest of his life.
Right.
What did I do?
I don't know what you do.
I nailed it is what I did. T.J. Hooker. I watched T.J. Hooker. There's only two shows that I tape record. T.J. Hooker, Lawrence Welk. They are both amazing on multiple levels.
And a one, and a two.
But the wardrobe is just – the clothes they had alone on Lawrence Welk were just so great. But with T.J. Hooker, it was like the hair show.
Yep.
Heather Locklear is like 9 in that show. Her
feathered.
Her hair is exploding off the top of her head. This blonde backlit, you know, thing. She was like a dandelion walking around. And then Adrian Zemed, whose hairline started at his eyebrows, so he had all the hair he needed. He had like way too much.
He had like 9 people's hairs.
And then James Darren was in it. Now on Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, when I watched that show in the late 60s, he had the hair.
Yep.
Now he's. He's just have to work it a little more.
Yeah.
A little more time in the chair.
Yep.
But he's got it. Shatner, forget it. Get the raccoon out. And there were a couple seasons where he had a really good hair enhancement. Call it what you will. And it looked great. It looked great. And other years, Zambo the Tent Maker was in because I don't know where Luigi went. It must have been a contract thing. Shatner pissed him off. I don't know what it is. That thing is up and ready to pounce. But it's also the
give it away for the garbage.
All of the uniforms were completely tailored, tight, and they were shiny. But the most impressive thing was the Shatner power slide. He would pull up to all the crime scenes, and they would hold. He'd come screaming right up and then stop, and they keep shooting, and Shatner gets out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no doubt that that was a Shatner power slide.
Yeah.
There were no cuts. And I remembered it over – it happens over and over again. So next time you watch it, you'll see it. He'll do the Shatner power slide.
Well, when the fiance and I get together tonight to watch our T.J. Hooker
USA,
like we do every
night. USA has a digital network. Universal.
Universal, so you can
HD.
Watch it. On, so how did what did you drop on him that made him open up about T.J. Hooker?
I asked him how he did it.
The power slide.
I said – I could tell that that was you, and those are not simple pull-ups. You could have smashed into the back of these cars. He goes, the producers didn't want me to do that. I go, really? So that's how you can bait an actor. Really? Tell me about that. Well, they thought I'd wreck the car, but I learned how to do it. He worked with a stunt guy. You feather the emergency brake. So the stunt guys would shave it down so it doesn't stick. So you feather it. It's counterintuitive. You're driving. It's a 4-part maneuver. First, foot off the gas. Second, hand on the emergency brake. You can still steer with the emergency brake. That's the fundamental difference. You can't steer with the brake. So now, foot off the gas, feather the emergency brake, start your steer. Right before you stop, hit the real brake, and you'll stop on a dime. And he was absolutely right. I go to do Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yes.
There was a scene where Sam Raimi wants me to pull up in front of a bar in my crappy car, my Delta 88, and do the power slide. I'm like, okay, I think I know how to do this. So we went to an airstrip outside of Auckland, New Zealand, and they were like, all right, mate, let's give it a go. So I'm like, so let me get this right. Is this a four-part maneuver? Oh, yeah, yay. Foot off, feather it, steer, pop. And that's exactly how they did it down there. So I pulled up in the pilot, you know, did the Shatner power slide. It worked exactly how it should. I get out, the camera keeps rolling, I get out. You know, it was not anything that was going to light the world on fire, but it was a precision stop, let's call it that.
Yeah, so, which was Shatner in origin.
Shatner's power slide. So next time I see him, I have not seen him since I personally performed his power slide. So there's a high five green room moment when I see him next.
Does he, when you run into him, does he remember you now?
He does eventually, because I always find him, I pay my respects, and I leave immediately.
Yeah.
He likes that a lot.
Yeah.
That you just leave.
Because he was amazing on this podcast maybe a year ago. I mean, amazing.
He's out of control.
But then I saw him at Comic-Con this past year, and I think in my head, well, we have this relationship that we've established.
Who are you? Why are you talking to me? You're in my eye line. Back off, buddy.
You're not shooting anything. What eye line? Where are the cameras?
Yeah, where are you?
I don't know. Tell him James Garner. And he starts to James Garner's ghost.
Well, there I was, walking down Laramie Street.
But he really is. I mean, he is a force of nature.
He is. He was three-wheeling, motorcycling across the country. He has 87 causes now.
Yeah.
He goes from one charity event to the next.
But don't you feel like, I mean, in all seriousness, when you get up into your 80s,
yeah,
you really probably don't want to just sit around and wait to get older. You probably want to be as engaged as possible, and that's how you stay so sharp.
I'm not going to retire.
Never.
To be a crappy golfer?
Yeah, you don't need that.
No, well, it's a weird mindset. Now I moved up to rural Oregon in the late 90s to get away from it all. And all my neighbors had pretty much done the same, and it was amazing to watch them flame out one at a time as couples, because we're retired, we're going to go out into the wilderness and build a cabin, and boy, it's going to be great. Oh, my God. Who are you? You're staring at me 8 hours a day. Who are you?
Oh, yeah, because that was not their normal relationship dynamic.
No, they saw each other 1 hour a day on the move. Hey, babe, how are you doing? Oh, good.
You're the best, I tell you. All you're right. The best.
So long, sweetheart. Be back later after rehearsal. So different ballgame. So there's a big adjustment period to this false sense of what a career is and all that. Those guys are great inspirations. Stan Lee. He's 90,
91
or over 90.
Could be, yeah.
You know, in the green room, yeah, he's napping.
Sure.
But he's there.
But when it's time to bring it, he brings it.
Rat-a-tat-tat. Stan Lee is hilarious. He's like a 60s ring-a-ding-ding guy.
Oh, he is.
You really expect him to have like, hey, let's go. He's got his hair's always looking good with the aviator glasses and the members-only jacket.
There are so few people
ready.
That can pull off, too, the whole it's an honor to meet me. You know what I mean? Like, there's so few people
Malaprop
that could
pull, Joe.
That, yeah, they could pull that off, and he absolutely.
Yeah. Well, like sometimes on our 8x10s for Evil Dead, you know, Beast Witches.
Yeah.
Saw You Later.
You know, he's been on twice, and the second time, sometimes it's hard to get him out of that mode because I think in his mind, people expect me to be this guy.
I'm the guy.
Yeah. And we talked for a little while, and then we finally, as I was just kind of digging around to see what he was interested in, we hit upon like old-timey radio, and the character dropped.
Yeah.
And he just talked like a guy, and it was so, a whole other side of him.
We'd gather around the radio and make marshmallows and listen to the shadow.
I mean, it kind of was exactly like, I mean, it was exactly like that. And
that was
so,
your lifeline, the radio.
And it was really interesting to see like, oh, this other side of you, which is probably more the real Stan, is equally as charming and lovable as the carnival.
Hey, as a podcaster person,
yes,
you might appreciate this.
Yes.
I call it the big five.
Okay.
There's very few entertainers, and it's hard for any modern entertainers to do this now. We'd have to recreate what the Big Five is.
Okay.
Big Five is vaudeville,
mm-hmm.
Broadway,
yep.
radio, television, movies.
Right.
Very few have done it all. A bunch of the schmoes back in the 30s, though, because radio was so huge, on top of everything else, you'd have your Lux radio show with
right.
Cary Grant. Hello, everybody. You know, nice to see you. And that's just what you did. You went from radio and you
say,
did
who's on first?
Wait a minute. I'm not supposed to be here. 20 minutes ago, I was having a martini.
But a lot of those radio guys transitioned pretty seamlessly into television because a lot of those radio shows morphed into television.
Or Alan Ladd went from radio to being a tough guy in movies.
Right, right.
He had a voice, so they went, well, just put the shrimp in front of the camera. Put them on boxes.
So is there a Big Five now?
I know you'd have to get the internet. It'd have to be anchoring because you have to take away vaudeville now. You can still have Broadway.
Yeah.
Still have radio.
Yeah.
You know, guys like Howard Stern were still fat in radio.
Yeah, he managed to conquer film, radio, television,
yeah.
satellite radio.
Yeah, but the question is now, what takes place of vaudeville shoved on the other side?
I don't know. I mean,
there will always be live entertainment, I think, because it's just too novel.
I mean, stand-up, you know.
Stand-up.
Stand-up, but it's not.
Stand-up could be close to vaudeville, but it's without the gags, really. Vaudeville always had the physical. Also had the variety aspect. We don't have a lot of variety shows either.
No.
Everybody had a variety show.
Yeah.
The Dean Martin variety show ran for 10 years. The less he gave a crap, the more it made. Well, how about if I just come in and sing one song every month? Okay, Dean. That's even more popular. Once a year is good, guys.
It's almost like the less people could have him, the more they're like, we got to have him.
I love that guy.
He's the best. Let's just
Where's he been?
He's been right here the
we
whole time.
We got to keep watching.
All right. Yeah, because there's nothing else on.
Meanwhile, I'll buy Canoga Park, California.
Hey, it's all right if we relocate a lot of the people who live there?
What do you think?
All right, what do you think?
Hey, move on, guys.
All right, come on, guys. I mean, it. You know, having worked on so many different things, would you want to be a radio guy? Do you like radio? Would you? Because I feel like you should probably do a podcast.
I think radio is really cool because that's how Sam and I met, Sam Raimi and I. I dropped typing in high school. I got, for some dumb reason, I didn't ask to be put in anything. I just wound up in high school and had classes and just took them. And one was typing, and I'm in the middle of typing, looking around going, there's 30 people who, why do they know how to type already? Why? They're flying away, like, you know, looking at their watch and pulling sheets out. And I'm going, yeah, pop, 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 pop. Within 3 days, I was like, I went to a counselor. I didn't even know where the counselor was in the school. Hi, can I drop a class? They're like, well, sure. I'm like, really? What do you want to take? I'm like, what do you got? So radio speech. I saw that one. Yeah, radio speech. Let me do that. So Sam Raimi was in the radio speech class, and we started to do the morning announcements. Every Friday morning. And of course, those were full of cheap, you know, cheap gags and beyond. And that's how we got in with the radio speech teacher who was also the drama teacher. And you were not going to get in those school plays unless you went through him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He has to be the gatekeeper.
He was the gatekeeper. We didn't know that till our second year of high school. We went, we think he's the gatekeeper.
So you gotta make nice with
we
him.
Got through the gatekeeper. And then we were little Broadway stars in high school for the last couple of years of high school. We got in.
That's great. And so the morning announcement, what was a typical Campbell Raimi morning announcement like?
We let our teacher be the announcer. Next week, it was the adventures of like Captain Nemo. It was an adventure. It was a continuing serial.
Oh, wow.
And I was Wood-Eye, his assistant. And so it was we were a bunch of pirates going around the world. A little Monty Python-ish.
Yeah.
Fireside Theater.
Fireside Theater, yeah.
We were big fans of that because they sort of made their own sound effects. And it was really cool to listen to them in stereo.
Yeah.
There was something really cool about that.
You know, they still do that in England. They're still very much like radio plays and,
I like
and serialized. And here, I mean, you know, we have podcasts. There are certainly fictionalized podcasts.
Yeah.
But Bruce, you should absolutely – I feel like a podcast is inevitable for you because you have great stories, because you like talking to people, and you can
– But what do you do? What this whole podcasting at all, it's like smoke and mirrors to me. This
no,
podcast translates into what?
You just talk. Oh, you mean
right?
What is it ultimately?
And people go, I like how that guy sounds. And they listen to you.
Yes.
Which, and then what happens? Advertisers go, well – It seems like we've got quite the listenership here.
That's right.
Yeah. I think that's worth.
That's right. Adam West comes in and
hello. How are you? He's so awesome, Adam.
He's
West.
Awesome too.
He inspires me too.
He is amazing.
That guy seems like he's never had a bad day. I met him randomly in like 1983 at a American Film Market party. I was like, oh my God, that's Adam West. Nicest guy on the planet. And out of nowhere, he goes, I just got a marvelous residual check from Hooper. Like, what? What the hell's a residual check? I didn't even know what that was.
He's such a nice dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I wish I was having a martini right now.
Have you? You don't have to say who. Have you had disappointments when you've met heroes before?
Oh, that's pretty standard.
Yeah,
yeah. And I've disappointed. There was a woman who's a fan who came up to a table at a signing and she goes, "Did you enjoy the present?"
Uh oh.
And I went, "Yep, I
yes,
I
yes,
sure
and.
Did.
Yes,
I
and.
Sure did enjoy that present." And she goes, you know, did it fit? Yeah, oh boy. Now we're getting like, she's going to try and draw some specific answer out of me. But so I had to give the yes, it fit, yet it didn't fit. You know, that was great. And she proceeded to tell me the three other times that she had met me and all the other things that she gave me. And surely, Bruce, you would remember this. And then you remember I gave you that, and in this city I gave you that. And if I was on the witness stand, you just would shout to the judge, just get the bailiff. Just take me out of here.
I quit. I'm guilty.
I cannot defend myself from this. I have nothing to say that is going to help the situation. And she just did a slow turn away, never to return.
Oh.
You know. Again.
And you did but you're doing your best in that situation. And there's so, like, when people are coming up at that.
I've heard it both ways, though. One guy sent me an email and he goes, "Hey, Bruce, just want to let you know, I met you at the airport and you were kind of an asshole to me." And I thought that was kind of cool. Because they didn't want to see some, grabbing hands. Oh, thank you so much for, let's get pictures of everybody.
Yeah.
Some actors they'll go that way too.
Yeah,
it blows it. It's bad in another way because they go, "Oh, that guy who plays those characters, he shouldn't be. Oh, he's just like this loosey goosey guy."
Yeah,
he's
just
not
take pictures with anybody.
He's not like that. Like Burt Lancaster, I kept hearing would walk around in schmate sweaters, ill fitting sweaters, and pants you just throw on, and loose fitting, you know, tennis shoes.
Yeah,
I'm like, not Burt Lancaster.
Yeah, no, he's got a
Burt Lancaster. You got to be in a suit all the time, Burt.
He probably just needed to do that to balance out the other guy.
My dad met him late at a bar, late at night. My dad was an ad man. He was a Detroit madman for 30 years, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Oh, wow.
Great stuff. And so he came back from some event. I'm sure he was lubed up pretty good. And he sees Burt Lancaster. He goes, "Burt Lancaster? Charlie Campbell." And he was always Charlie Campbell, sales guy.
Oh, I wish his name had been Pete Campbell.
And Bert looked at him and he goes, "Of course you are." And just turned away. Conversation was over.
Well, some of those guys, there was such, like in those days, there was such a separation.
There was a big firewall. Massive.
Between movie stars and common mouth breathers.
Oh.
You know, now the lines are so blurred. People are
so
connected.
Well, it's like this, you know, MGM. Yeah, hello. Oh, Gable. He's under the what booth? What booth? All right. All right. Seal it off. Don't let anybody else in chasing. Okay.
Yes.
Yep. Be right there. Jenkins. Go get Clark. Yep. Same booth. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Click. And it would be done. And Clark's, "Why do you pick him? I'm not drunk." And they take him home, and it's all done.
He accidentally murdered three busboys, and they covered it up. And
well, that
put
might
him
take
in the,
a little longer.
Put him in the chili. Might, and
no, Clark Gable is awesome because he never lied ever to the press, and they had to get him away from the press because he did an interview. "Well, Clark, you finished, just won an Academy Award for, what happened when I..." "Well, it's all a bunch of hokey, isn't it? An actor doesn't make up his lines. He doesn't really know anything. They tell you where to stand. They tell you what to wear. They drive you around. What does an actor do, after all? I don't know. Smile a lot? Look like he's Berkey. It's really just a bunch of hunk, actually. They're like, ah, cock, no. They grabbed him. They hustled him off to where I live in southern Oregon, to the Rogue River. Clark, go fishing. Do you like to fish or hunt? Well, not really. Well, learn. After every movie, they would just send him away in between assignments to the Rogue River. And after a while, he's like, you know what? I kind of like this. They could just leave me the hell alone when I'm not working. I like that. So he basically, from that point on, never spoke to the press ever again. It was all, they would write all his stuff for him, send him away on lovely little trips.
And I married a bear. Why can't I marry a bear?
It would build his image, too.
People just say,
well, I'm out hunting and fishing.
Oh, of course.
Well, that's what Clark Gable would do.
Of course.
Shoot and take Carol Lombard, and we're going to drink and smoke cigarettes.
See, that's kind of the cool. You were following in those footsteps in a way. You got out there.
Those books are really handy. Those old time. I read every old time actor book I can find. Every new time actor book I can find. They're so helpful.
For what?
The Clark Gable one was awesome. They had the memos going back and forth between his first wife, who was clearly blackmailing MGM, that the word was going to get out because she made Clark Gable. She found him on Broadway, you know, taught him how to act, taught him how to stand up straight, fix your teeth, all this crap. And so now he's, you know, a long time when, like, Gone with the Wind starts percolating up. She sends this memo. Well, I've got this wonderful screenplay idea, and maybe you could purchase that. Or I'd hate for all this information to get out about how I discovered a very ill-prepared Clark Gable
for
the professional
world. Did it work?
They would like give her an option to a screenplay. Like they'd write back and it would be this, boy, that sounds like a great idea. We'll do that right away. And they would just bullshit her for years until things would just go away. They would just drag it out.
Do you think the business has changed at all since those books, or do you see a lot of the same?
Well, when you see the Sony emails come flying around,
oh sure,
you realize, like any sort of cottagey industry, you're going to have a lot of tight affiliations between clients and executives, and sometimes it's a little precious, and sometimes, as you can see by those emails, when it turns, it turns.
I'm like,
that guy's a jerk and a moron. Can you believe we were working with that guy?
Right.
And then other times it'll be, oh, you're so talented. It's like if one email goes this way, the other email goes that way.
But is that really that surprising to anyone?
It shouldn't be.
No.
It shouldn't be. But I think now that everyone loves to see how the sausage is made, it's all over anyway.
Yeah.
It really is. You make a two-hour movie, you have to have 17 hours of extras. And then here's day one behind the scenes. You go, oh, really?
Day one, of course.
Nothing happened on day one.
To sell the DVDs or to
it's push amazing.
The digital download stuff.
Yeah, people are really amazed by that, I guess. I'm not sure what they're learning. But, you know, my feeling about deleted scenes, what the hell are you showing those for? They were deleted for a reason. Even the filmmakers very often were like, get rid of that. That sat there like a lump. Nuke it. So, you know, I don't know. I'm a little dubious about all that.
How do you see yourself? I mean, in terms of how do you perceive yourself? Because, you know.
Well, necessarily different than anybody else.
But, I mean, of course, in an existential way, of course. But, I mean, you know, but the title of your book, you know, this idea of, like, I'm owning the fact that I'm a B actor. You're not really. I mean, you are really kind of an A guy.
I've done a lot of small parts in big movies, big parts in small movies.
How do you see
if
yourself?
I'll grab that spot if I can get it. I'll take it. One guy called me the Gregory Peck of B movies. I'm like, I'll take that. I'll take that. Stop right there. I'll cut your goddamn head off with this chainsaw. You know what I mean? It's a little different. Same approach, though. You want to like Ash as a series now, Ash versus Evil Dead.
Which looks so amazing.
Well, now the trick is this is where – well, the knives are going to come out eventually. We've gotten some soft sizzles so far. I think the nostalgia is working for us. All those decapitations,
it's not just nostalgia, though, because the world is replete with nostalgia. As a matter of fact, there's almost a little like we need a break from nostalgia. But what's great about Ash vs. Evil Dead is that it looks up – like tonally, it looks like it picks up at a million miles an hour right where it left off.
It
does. It's the same
– and the only problem may be that other directors are not as fearless.
Right.
Sam will put me in a man girdle and pop dentures in within 30 minutes. I mean, the opening scene, the hero is in a man girdle. And, you know, he's putting the hair dye in his hair. It's like only Sam could get away with that because other writers would go, oh man, I don't know. That's just, that's. Yeah. And then with Sam, it's like, no, he's drinking out of a juice box and he's listening to Deep Purple, you know.
Nostalgia for nostalgia's sake is focusing on the wrong things that made something good to begin with. It's focusing on the surface
elements. But if it helps us a little bit now, I'll take a little bit of it.
But the chemistry that you guys have together and the magical thing that happens when this gets made, when Ash comes back. I mean, it's everything seems like it's there.
Well, good. And we tried to make it there. You know, we tried to give them everything that they need. Like any show, the first seasons are always going to be a little bit of like, what is it? You know, the scripts will come in and you'll give notes and stuff like that. And you find it. And some stuff you find right on the page and some stuff we had to squeeze out on the set. But we also have that ability to do that.
Yeah.
The beauty of this, the reason why I'm willing to go to New Zealand again, this is my fourth TV show there now.
Oh, wow. What else?
Hercules. Oh, right. Xena. Jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And now this one. I'll go there because we really have a free hand. And when push comes to shove, like I had a manager years ago, I'd go down to do Hercules. And he goes, you know, and all managers talk like Thurston Howell. When you go down there to New Zealand, you know, you might as well be dead. These syndicated shows, what do they add up to? I mean, really? It's not broadcast. You're not reaching any great amount of people. I'm like, well, then you don't know what I do. Because we could go down there on these shows. I directed a bunch of Hercs and Xenas as well. We got away with murder on a daily basis because there was no studio. It was syndicated.
Right.
So who's going to – where's the nitpicker guy? If we get a note, we'd go, oh, we shot that 4 days ago.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. And that was back when you'd ship the footage and it would take 2 days to get there and then they have to develop it. So literally the notes were always 3 days away. And we would always go, oh, we're on to the next episode. So it was very spoiling to work like that. Because then when you go back and work in the States, it's not that. The writers are way more part of the process.
Yeah. Do you like directing?
I love directing. You know, especially – but, again, I love directing in an environment where if something's not working, I can change it on the spot.
Right.
I've worked on so many shows. Oh, he wants to – oh, boy, he wants to add a line. All right, hold on. Let's call the front office. And you have to literally get a single line of dialogue that's added, approved. On Burn Notice, I'd throw everything at the end because I knew they could just cut it off. You know what I mean? I don't want to change the plot. But right. Some scenes need a button that the writer doesn't always think about.
And if it works, great. And if not, you cut it out.
Keep it. And, yeah, it's no skin off anybody's neck.
But I think that's sort of the spirit of coming from a background where you have to be really scrappy and figure out how to make stuff and do stuff on the fly and be flexible with your environment.
I just like being flexible, period, though, at whatever budget. Like, that's a good thing of Sam. You know, I did one day on Oz the Great and Powerful. I played some dumb Winky who's tormenting Oz who wants to get in, James Franco. And Sam shot so much stuff that just not didn't get anywhere near the cut. Flies landing on our noses, us going trying to blow the fly off while we're trying to have this conversation, and the fly goes to his nose, and you know it just. And meanwhile, you know they're grinding away through $1 million an hour,
sure.
And Sam's going, "Let's try this now." And as an actor, it's great. That's the way to work. I really like that.
I actually sent a thing. I don't do this all the time. I sent a note out to Twitter because I know that people really like you and they have a lot of questions and you've probably answered some of these. So
no, let's
if you don't
do it.
If you don't want to answer any of these, just
no,
just
no.
Get in my
I've,
face
I've answered them all.
You get in my face, you grab me by the scruff, and you tell me to.
No, I'm going to come up with new answers to the old questions.
Okay, this is from at Very Loud Array. What was Bruce's first concert?
Wow. Embarrassed to say. I'm not really a concert guy. First music I listened to was The Carpenters.
Mm-hmm.
And because my dad had a new stereo and you could blow up the headphones had an inflatable top and you could blow that up, and it would fit. So the headphones would just like stick to your ear.
Oh, interesting.
And so it was awesome stereo. I didn't care if it was the Carpenters or not. It sounded really good to me. But I've never liked music that made my head hurt in any way.
Right.
Like in high school, I'd play AC/DC during the study hall. We would also be the DJs during study hall.
Oh, right. Okay.
Where they'd expect you to play music. And they'd put in requests. They'd slip it under the door. You know, Kiss or whatever. So I'd put that on and then just put my finger on the turntable for like a minute and just drag it to a slow death. It was just awesome.
I want to rock and roll.
I didn't give him hope. It like give it a little. Nope. And the door to the studio was about 4 inches thick, which was good because we called them the burnouts. They were all there. Turn it up. What are you doing? And then I'd stop it. And then I had a song called Cornflakes, which was really just stupid music.
Right.
I don't know who would ever use it or listen to it, but I'd spin that on and let them suck on that for a couple minutes. It was awesome.
Okay. Let's see.
The power of radio, as you know.
This is from Ray Powers. Describe your ideal snack drink combo.
Snack drink?
Yeah. What's your snack and drink combo?
Wow. There's a wicked good farmer's market coconut yogurt where there's piles of coconut shards in the yogurt.
Okay.
And that with any kind of cookie and hot tea.
Okay. This is from at MD Film Blog. Bruce, what's it like being a man of such pure sexual force?
I lost my virginity at 23. So just take that and file that away. It wasn't from lack of trying, but there wasn't a whole lot going on around here. I married the first woman who ever came on to me.
Really?
Yeah.
And you're still together?
No.
Okay.
But I learned that was just a thing.
It's just a thing that
can doesn't
happen.
Mean you marry. You get married.
You don't have to marry everybody.
Jeez, you seem sort of interested. Let's get married.
Yeah. Hey, you're not. Yeah, that's weird. You could have left. You didn't leave.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I got you a toothbrush.
Let's move in together.
Come on. Okay, let's see. What current TV series would you like to appear on if given the opportunity? From at Matt Connedy.
Too late, Mad Men.
Too Mad Men.
Mad Men.
Oh, you would have been great on
I
Mad Men.
I would love to come through and be a guy, just a three-episode arc, you know.
Yes.
And just tear the place apart, fire some people.
You'd want to be an ad guy.
Oh, tough ad guy sent from the main office to come in and wreak some havoc.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, to fire some people.
God, it's almost worth doing another Mad Men movie.
They could do that.
Matt Weiner would do it just to have you come in and fuck with everyone.
Come on,
that would be amazing.
Matt, let's do it.
What was it? What did you pick up from your dad being an ad guy? And what did you take? What tools did you take into your career?
The 300 plus photographs I have of tattoos on people's bodies from Evil Dead. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what my dad would have taught me. It's a walking billboard.
Right.
This is good news. That paint doesn't just wear off and they don't just put another coat on. You're owning that for a long time. So I got a great collection. And I also learned, what did I learn from him? He was a billboard inspector, one of the few actual billboard inspectors in the 50s, 50 through 53. He worked for Chevrolet. And I'm reading a big Henry Ford book where Henry Ford croaked, I think, about 47 for Ford. And my dad started in the business like 3 years later. So my dad just missed like that Henry Ford era.
Sure.
But he worked for Chevrolet, and the ascension of Chevrolet in the 50s and 60s, they became the number one car.
Oh, wow.
So he would go into these towns, and he worked for Campbell Ewald. And no relation whatsoever,
oh,
but my
weird.
Dad would reach his hand out, "Hi, Chuck Campbell, Campbell Ewald." And they figured, oh, well,
he must be the guy.
He's a partner in the company.
Yeah.
And he would come in to inspect all – he had east of the Mississippi was his route.
How do you inspect a billboard? What are you looking for?
You have to look day and night. You look for the – it has to be seen because it's Chevrolet. It has to have the best spot in town. You have to be able to see it from both sides of traffic.
Sure.
It has to have the highest visibility. He'd come back at night to make sure it was lit.
Mm-hmm.
And he also found out if he told them in advance that he was coming into town, they would move everything all over the place. He learned just show up randomly. Hi, how you doing? Oh, check. I will take you around. No, just give me the map where all the where everything is, and I'll see it myself. And he would see that they move stuff.
It turns out the billboard inspector has a lot of power and inspires fear.
He does in a way. Although he was inspecting one particular billboard and found a farmer who had hung himself with his belt behind the billboard.
Jesus, it's like,
yeah,
Christ.
Whoa. Putting that
this
on the
farmer
road.
Needs to be out in front, visible from both sides.
Yeah. We got to redo this billboard. There's defects with it. And the sheriff's like, well, what are you doing back there? I'm a billboard inspector. You're a what?
Oh, yeah. That
no
sound
one
real.
Believed that. So that he got a little bit of trouble every so often. He trashed a company car. He had a company car for 3 years, so he was loaded. He always had money in his pocket. He had a Necker's knob. It was a knob that would spin on the wheel. So you could literally have one arm around your girlfriend, the Necker's knob.
And necking.
Necking, a Necker's knob. And then you could turn a full turn with one hand because the knob would spin as you turn the wheel.
Sure it would.
So he one time trashed a company car. He got behind a truck during a flood. A flood had gone over this bridge. And the trucker in front of him goes, I'll go first and I'll create a wave, and you stay real close, and we'll get right through this. My dad goes, okay, good idea. It was not; it didn't part the water at all. It created a rooster tail, like 5 feet tall, went right into the car, flooded the car. He got halfway across the bridge. The car died. Kills the car. He also had a girlfriend in Chicago, and pre-pager GPS, he went everywhere through Chicago.
Oh, sure.
You know, oh, I'm in Peoria. Yep, I sure am. And they would catch people lying. It was a pretty interesting thing. He loved it. Then he went from that to media buying. You place ads here and there. And he worked his way up to the account executive, like a Don Draper, and then lost the account and got fired.
Oh, shit.
That's how it happens.
Hey, man, it's a tough game.
Yeah, get used to it, Charlie. You're out on the streets. Fortunately, he came back as an old admin to a company called McCann Erickson. And they were the parent company to where he started at Campbell Ewald. So he got all of his pension.
Well, wasn't McCann Erickson in Mad Men?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
They're still around.
Oh, man.
It was great. And I was a PA in Detroit, so I went to all the ad agencies, J. Walter Thompson, all the ones that dealt with the car companies. Each car company had its own ad agency. They never shared them. Which would have been very interesting.
I mean, listen, if Matt Weiner's listening to the podcast, do you want to audition now for Mad Men?
Yeah, let me give it a try. It'd be something like this.
Okay.
I'm bringing you guys together for this meeting today because the car industry needs to be revamped. We need the Edsel. It's a famous Ford name. It's going to be huge, right? What do you think, Edsel?
Cut. Yeah, I think we got
it. All right, moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Yeah, we just shot the audition. You're already in the show.
Sweet.
Now let's bring in those cigarettes and be disrespectful to women and minorities.
Let's go. Oh, you're talking about Henry Ford. He's got that covered.
Oh, does he?
Oh, wowzer bowser. Snakes in your trouser. Hey, guy. The moguls were all the craziest of the crazy.
Of course, because they weren't tethered to anything and no one would tell them no.
Alcohol is wrong for your body. You and all of your alcohol people, get away from Ford. And you're smoking cigarettes, I noticed. You're no good either. But me, I can have a mistress for 30 years.
Yes.
I knew there was something. As I'm reading this book, I'm like going, no way. There's no way he's this clean. It's not going to happen. He's an industrialist. He's got that world at his fingertips. Sure enough, meets hello. And he picked a husband for her so that she could have a normal life.
Oh, my God. That's...
Which was his driver and bodyguard.
Were they?
You two look like a wonderful couple. Oh, look, you're married.
So was it a sham marriage to disguise or was it?
It became a sham marriage pretty damn soon.
Or were they actually like married? Were they actually like married?
They got married.
Oh my God!
Oh, for years.
What a puppet master!
He was the ultimate puppet master. The original Mr. Burns. he had many people doing his bidding.
I didn't know anything about that incident where my boys cracked your skull open in front of my plant.
Listen, I'm just a simple car maker. I don't know nothing about nothing.
I used to ride home in a buggy just 10 years ago. I don't know much about nothing but corn.
Listening to him and listening to Clark Gable not swear the entire time.
He's Clark Gable who didn't swear. Exactly.
Well, listen, I don't... I could talk to you for 3 more hours. I hope
that won't accomplish a single thing.
It doesn't matter. No.
Let's just walk away right now.
Right now?
Bad Foley.
Why'd I wear these rings on my feet?
Yeah, we can do better than that.
I can't even get my shoes off to simulate walking away. This floor doesn't really.
No. It's not a bad surface. All
here
right.
Here I go. On.
This is a podcast. Let's go. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Here, but hold on. You hold it there.
Okay. I'm going to Foley
not
it
on
here.
The table, yeah.
Okay. Let's lock it down. Footsteps, take one.
All right. I'll see you later. See, the problem is, normally your real foot would be in this, and you would roll. You'd go heel toe.
Yeah, that's the problem. Your hands are in your shoes at the moment, and that's not
the monkey walk now. Yeah, it's a simulated situation.
Monkeys don't like to wear shoes
because otherwise, I'd have to actually walk on the table.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's try it again. Let's try one more time. Let's try one more time.
Oh, you think I'm actually going to figure this out. Mm-hmm. Now?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Is it take two?
Hold on.
Okay.
There's really only one way to do this.
You're going to walk on the table.
I'm going to walk on the table.
Okay, great. Bruce going to get up on the table.
You know what? Good news is it looks pretty sturdy.
And his last words were...
Yeah. Don't worry, it looks sturdy.
I'll just...
Isidore Duncan. I'll be right there. Let me get my scarf. Famous last words.
Okay. Bruce Campbell now getting on
Now I can feel it's already going
to
work.
Well, now as you're up there, I feel like I need to just make sure that I capture this moment. You are actually on the table.
Okay. So now the proper weight distribution... is correct. I can do the proper heel toe.
Yeah, you can do the proper heel toe.
All right.
Okay, ready?
See you later.
Go.
Wait, listen, just you hear how the simple... Do it again. Here we go. Nah, I rushed it.
Yeah.
That's forced.
Yeah.
Here we go.
But that's... But the,
wait, now let me do a series.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Yeah. If you get into a rhythm, you can really get it.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay. Wow, he's really walking away quietly and confidently.
Oh, wait, let me stop because I hear a noise.
Okay. What was that? Did you hear that? Oh, well. I guess I better...
And then...
Oh, hey! Are you okay? He's gone.
He fell off the table. That's about all I can do with these shoes. Under these trying circumstances.
Listen, the shoes were the star of that.
Yep.
But you played a great supporting role.
Thank you.
It was really... This was a wonderful...
I could be a detective. You see that heel? I ran that down.
Yeah. Let's reboot T.J. Hooker. Well, everyone wants Briscoe County to... You know, like, I hear a lot of, like, let's reboot Briscoe County, too, while we're at it.
No, because my mother would be too mortified.
No, why?
Because she thought I got hurt every week.
Oh.
One week, she saw an episode. She goes, Bruce... You have got to stop letting them make you do those dangerous stunts. I'm like, Mom, what did I do? You rode that horse past that building and grabbed that little girl, and then it blew up as you rode past it?
Mm-hmm.
What if you dropped that little girl?
She's right.
I said, Mom, that little girl was an African-American stuntman who was a little person who owned a bar in Van Nuys, California. That was a stunt person. And then that was just a long, minute-long pause for her to process that. Well, what if you dropped that stunt person?
And then she was worried about...
He's worried about the little guy.
Did she see Army of Darkness being like, why did you cut your hand off?
No, and I said, Mom, it wasn't me.
Wait a minute.
It wasn't me who dropped something that wasn't a girl. Well, what if they had blown that up, even if he had gotten the little girl? What if they blew that building up? Mom, there's a guy with his button on the trigger. And if the guy doesn't get the bar owner from Van Nuys and he doesn't get him up off the ground, he's not going to push the button.
It's all a lie. Television's all a lie.
Oh. I had my wisdom teeth out. I woke up. She had passed out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
I got my little boy. Pump. She's out. So she doesn't get to see anything anymore. She's not seeing Ash versus Evil Dead.
It's best to shield her from that.
Not even close. Yeah. I'll tell her about episodes.
Yeah.
And then it's very exciting, Mom. And I play a heroic character. That's what mom's going to hear.
And at the end, she'll everything's go, oh, great.
Finally.
Yeah.
She loves the fact I can shave as this character, though. I went for 7 years on Burn Notice unshaven. She was so disappointed.
Well, I mean, that's very unkempt.
That was just such a scruffy, unnecessary look.
But did you like the show?
It was such a scruffy look.
Oh, but the show was good.
You're so much better looking than that. She doesn't want to hear about playing a role.
You know, I'm glad that never ends because I sometimes think my mom
is 85. It's just still going. So now I just tell her what she wants to hear. I just lie back.
My old boyfriend, Henry Ford, used to say, what?
For 30 years, I was his boyfriend. Mom, I had no idea.
Oh.
I thought you were just a secretary over there at the Rouge plant.
What? Oh, I'm old. I don't know.
Oh, look at the time. Oh, that's what my mom says. After 10 minutes on the phone, she's the opposite.
She's the one.
No, she's – most mothers are like, you never call. So whenever I call, she goes, oh, hi. Hey, so what's going on? Not much. It's been so nice of you to call. Like, are we done? Yes, Don. Oh, okay. All right, Mom. All right, I'll see ya. I'm like, Don, yeah. I got a brother, Don. Hey, I guess she thought I sounded like Don.
Hey, what are you going to do?
But she always doesn't want to hold me up. Well, I'll let you go. That's how she ends it. I'll let you go.
That's really sweet.
She, like, hang up is what she means, is stop talking to me.
I know, but she's making it seem like it's because she, you know.
Yeah, but she should
you.
Just say, save herself the trouble.
Yeah.
I'm done talking to you.
Well, I'm sure she's listening to this podcast. It's time she learned the truth.
Mom, don't listen to this because this podcast will make you pass out.
Yeah.
Because of how badly I've been treated on this show.
But while you're at it,
don't listen
to this. Get back on your phone game. Improve your phone game. I told her for you, so you didn't have to.
Well, you sure did.
President Reagan again.
He slips in. Funny thing is, I had imitated Reagan for years with my buddy John Cameron, who produces the show. We went to high school together. And then all my formative, my kids were born and raised in the Reagan era.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, he was on television all the time. There was no way to not imitate Ronald Reagan. The trick is on Fargo was to not do a hokey imitation.
Sure.
He used to... Well, dig deep, find the real Dutch. Who's in there?
By the end of his presidency, it was just like, well, best one.
He's standing in front of a wall because I watched a bunch of footage, of course, to get ready. And there's a wall of press just hammering him. Hey, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? And he keeps going. And Nancy's like 1 foot away. She goes, we're doing everything we can. And a beat later, he goes, we're doing everything we can. And now that he had his line, he could deliver it with good knowledge. And he had jokes. He always told a joke, usually a Russian joke, before his speeches. There are three dogs. There's an American dog, a Russian dog, and a Polish dog. And, well, the American dog knows that if he barks, well, he's going to get meat. And the Polish dog says, what's meat? And the Russian dog says, what's bark? He would always get a cheap shot at the Russians. Had to do it. Three guys in a Russian jail. One guy says to the other one, well, what are you in here for? He says, I voted for Slonsky. Oh, look at the second guy. What are you in here for? I voted against Slonsky. And they turn to the third fellow. What are you in here for? He says, well, I'm Slonsky.
Anyway, we're at war.
Anyway, here we go, and away we go.
We're at nuclear war now.
And we'll start bombing in 5 minutes.
Anyway, this Polish fellow. No, Mr. President, please,
no, you're
please
on
don't.
The air. But smart guy brought his Hollywood tailors.
Yeah, right.
To the presidency, wouldn't you?
Of course.
Luigi, come on, straighten him up a little bit. You know what bumps out in the back when I sit over and when they put a microphone on me? You got to give me a little extra groove there, will you?
Look good. Got to look good.
Right. Haircut every 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's got to, everything got to be headshot
ready.
You
want to look like a president, haircut every 2 weeks.
So when are you going to be president?
No way.
I don't know.
No, too horrifying. I tweeted, I now realize nothing political ever on any feed of mine. I did something about the riots in London. Like, I said something like, you know, way to wreck a 1,000-year-old city, you jerks. And, yeah. And some guy immediately, oh, it's 2,000 years old.
Oh,
and
right.
Then, oh, you're wrong. It wasn't in Manchester. Oh, the writer was
Ringo.
Over here. Yeah. Well, Ringo complained, too.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, he didn't like how I was taking on his city. So within seconds, it went from thinking I was helping whoever,
right.
Actors think they're helping, to...
You fucked that up.
You suck. You're so stupid. That's the most ignorant thing I've ever said. I went, okay. I like to hike, and here's some sunsets.
Oh,
Ash versus Evil Dead.
Riots are awesome.
How dare you? I don't want to just tell
my
me.
My mother was killed by a rioter.
Please just tell me what to say to not anger you.
Yeah, man. So no way.
Please, no rage.
No way.
Well, you are the people's Cary Grant. Thank you very much. It is wonderful to have you on. And actually, I did... You would never remember this, but years ago, in the first year of the podcast, I was at a Wizard World in Chicago, and I happened to be there, and I saw you in the there was this green room where everyone was just kind of eating, and I said, "Hey, I started a podcast and I'd love to have you on." And I did the thing you shouldn't do, which is I bother you while you're eating, and you're like, "My info's on the website."
I'm like, "I think you knew how to contact me, kid." Info's on the website. I'll go Clark Gable if I don't
What's
know
What's a website?
What's a website?
What is a wizard world? Is it a world run by wizards? What's a Patrick Stewart?
He's a sitcom guy now.
Yeah, he is. Blunt Talk. Blunt Talk's great.
Well, see, Starz is expandering. They're becoming a full-fledged dealio.
You gotta.
So you gotta have a sitcom.
Gotta have a sitcom. Otherwise nope, still no vaudeville, though. Who's on first?
Or a variety show. Come on, Starz variety show.
Let's do it.
It'll sink like a stone.
You and me.
We'll take that genre down together. We'll make sure it's crushed for 30 years.
30 minutes of live Foley.
No, better yet, let's do a really expensive Western.
Okay.
If you want to fully kill that for another decade.
Let's do it. Let's just go dive bomb as many genres as we possibly can.
But Clint got away with it because he'd shoot his movies in 4 days.
So there was no, it just was.
It never cost too much.
Never cost too much. Before anyone could say anything, it was done.
Done. Yeah, we already shot that. Oh, sorry. Moving on.
let me remove this gravel. Yeah.
You know why it's so squinty? It's because of the ASA of the film stock back then.
What?
It's like 64. Guys had up these reflective boards like an inch from your face. So, hell yeah, he was squinting.
Oh, because they were beaming the sun into his eyeballs.
Yeah, from Nassau directly into his eyes.
Yeah. Man.
Terrible.
But it worked.
Yeah, look at him now. He's washed up. Like an hour ago, he had the biggest hit he's ever had in his life.
That's a problem. But yeah, fuck that guy. Come on.
He's over the hill.
He's done.
Welcome.
Never going to work. Bruce Campbell, will never work with Clint fucking Eastwood.
Clint the Squint.
Come on.
Move on, Clint. There's a new sheriff in town. I'm sure he's worried there in Carmel.
Should I buy another golf course or not?
I don't know.
I haven't decided.
I just
feel lucky, Mr. Real Estate Man.
There was a disturbance in the force. Was someone talking ill of me? Can't help the squint.
He's pretty gravelly at this point.
Friend of mine co-wrote The Rookie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they said the first draft they turned in, he got killed at the end. The executives did the classic spit take. They were like, oh, don't show that to Clint, because he'll like that.
Oh.
Oh, don't, no. You're not going to kill Clint. You can maim him. Whatever you want to do.
Wing him?
Wing him. He gets winged. They like it. They get like winged, but wing him in the upper arm because be that way you'll see
you'll
it
see
on,
the bicep.
In the shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I got winged. They love that, but don't kill him.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. We're going to wing him, but then we're just going to blind him with the bounce card so that he's not going to even know what's happening.
Good point.
So it's all fine.
I'm leaving your studio.
Will you please say enjoy your burrito, everyone? That's how we end our podcast.
Enjoy a burrito, everyone.
The end.
Sounds like a Horace.
I'll race you! Oof!
You. you will get finally, thankfully, you'll get fired because of this podcast. Because people go, I realized an hour into it, this was not going to conclude.
Well, now in hour 17 of the Bruce Campbell mega podcast.
I'll never forget. And then Sam Raimi did something really funny.
Those days are not that far away.
No, they are.
Oh, yes, they are, sadly.
Well, 30 years in, actually, the funny thing is you do go to a meeting now and everyone is seven.
Oh, that's true.
It's like they're all wearing like their parents' clothes behind the desk. Rings are falling off when they gesticulate.
This didn't test well in Pacoima. It needs a younger audience. Where's my Capri Sun? All right, you're greenlit because green is pretty.
I'm going to work for Capri Suns from now on. You finally, now I figured out this town. I was short on Capri Suns. I should have come in with it.
You come in with your Capri
Cherry
Suns.
Cherry flavored.
Oh, green light, green light.
Anything you want. Anything you want. Your own trailer? We'll own this town.
I'm leaving your studio now.
Okay, that's fine.
Eighth time. Look, we can put the dog out.
Will you please sign our guest book?
Your Wookiee book.
And then we'll...
2 second imitation of Peter Mayhew.
Please.
At a convention. His Q&A.
Mr. Mayhew, was it hot in that outfit?
Well, yes, as you can imagine, it very, very hot, yes.
Can you do the Wookiee sound?
Oh, I don't actually do the Wookiee sound. That's an engineer does the Wookiee sound.
Thank you.
This concludes the Peter Mayhew panel.
Thank you for coming.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.